Welcome to the New Zealand Motoring Podcast, brought to you by podcasts.co.nz.
Welcome to a very special episode of the New Zealand Motoring Podcast, fifth episode. I'm Damien O'Carroll.
And I'm David Linklater.
And we are doing this from a slightly different place to usual.
Damien, I have a question to ask you.
Yes, David.
Are we moving?
Well, it depends. If they're watching this on video, they'll know the answer. But if they're only listening to the podcast, yes, we are moving.
I have another question.
What is that?
Can you hear anything?
Personally, not a lot. I could just about hear you nearly hitting that bus. But other than that...
You can't hear anything because we're in a Rolls-Royce. The Rolls-Royce Ghost 2, in fact.
First ever New Zealand motoring podcast recorded on the move. And possibly the first podcast ever in history recorded in a Rolls-Royce. I don't know for sure.
That's a bold claim.
That is a bold claim. I don't know if it's true. But we're
so, safety first, I'd like to give our listeners a quick safety briefing. We are hands-free.
We certainly are.
And we're very safety conscious.
In fact, we're so safety conscious, we've got GoPros all over the car to record us for evidence.
We have.
So we will be putting a video up on the Facebook page just to prove that we were doing it from inside the car.
So we thought it was a good opportunity, A, to come for a drive in the Rolls. Why not?
Why not?
Exactly. And B, to talk a little bit about luxury cars, hence the sort of special episode of the podcast.
We're abandoning our usual format and just going with one theme this time. We're talking about luxury cars.
So Ghost, in case people sort of don't know the Rolls-Royce hierarchy, Ghost is technically the small Rolls-Royce, sometimes called the baby Rolls.
The baby Rolls, yeah.
What you would term as a baby Rolls is relative, I suppose. It's a pretty big car, isn't it?
It's not small. Certainly not small.
It's based on the platform of the BMW 7 Series, of course. BMW owns the Rolls-Royce brand now, so they've taken the liberty of using the underpinnings of one of their luxury models for this car. The Ghost has been around since 2009. The one we're driving at the moment is the Ghost 2, so it's a mild kind of update. Rolls-Royce don't do facelifts, it's just the Ghost 2. Baby Rolls, 6.6 litre V12 engine.
Just a little one then. Nothing too excessive for the baby Rolls.
There's nothing babyish about it, but what do we think? Do we like it?
I do. I'm rather impressed. Went for a ride in the Phantom a while ago when you had that, and I have to say that was a massively impressive car. This doesn't have quite the... I mean, I know it is hand-built... bespoke sort of thing, but it doesn't quite feel as hand-built as the Phantom, perhaps.
No, well, I think the idea behind the Ghost is that it's supposed to be a bit more usable. It's the kind of car that you drive yourself, and you drive it every day. You know, it's... Okay, it's big. It's over 5 metres long. It's the size of a BMW 7 Series or a Mercedes S-Class.
Exactly.
But it is very usable. It's got all the BMW technology in it. It's got the BMW sat-nav and all the BMW electronic systems, so, you know, that all works faultlessly. But I would have to say you still get the Rolls-Royce sense of occasion.
You certainly do. There's certainly lots of wood and leather around.
Yeah, and it's all absolutely beautiful. This particular car we're in is a colour called Sandstone, and you can see that on the video if you've taken the trouble to watch that before you've listened to us. Inside, it's all red leather and walnut and a little bit of black and a little bit of cream, so it's quite old school, actually. It's like a vintage Rolls.
It is a bit. It is a wee bit. It's certainly not shy and retiring, that's for sure.
You can't, I mean, you don't drive one of these unless you want to be the centre of attention.
Certainly people do look, as they I've do. Noticed, if, driving along
if
here.
If for no other reason than the massive grille in the front and the fact that it's a really large car. But, it is great driving down the road and seeing the Spirit of Ecstasy, the flying lady,
pretty cool.
Atop the bonnet there.
I have to say, one thing we did notice about this earlier on was the unsettling lack of knurling. There's no. I do like a good bit of knurling in a luxury car.
That's a bit of an in-joke that probably only four people
I'm sure it is the case, but, you know...
Bentley's very big on knurling.
Bentley are fond of their knurling.
It's an effect that you get on some of the metal switches and things that you get in the cabin of a Bentley.
I'll put a photo of something knurled up on the Facebook page and on the video, just so you can see what we're referring to.
I've got a knurled pen at home, actually. I think you've got one of those, too.
Yes, I do, that's right.
We both attended a Bentley launch a little while ago, and the gift... that the journalist got was a knurled pen. But I digress.
Yeah, I've dragged us off course.
So, I mean, this is an opportunity to talk a little bit about luxury cars and what makes a luxury car. And I suppose if you asked anybody, you know, what's the ultimate luxury brand, they'd probably say Rolls-Royce, would you?
I would say so, definitely. I mean, there's not really any other manufacturer that makes anything quite like this.
Yeah, but why is it so special, do you think?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, it's just it's always... they've just really had the segment to themselves ever since they bought up Bentley. And
it's a bespoke car.
It is very much a bespoke car. You can have it, like, there's literally thousands of combinations of leather and interior and whatever you want to do with it. Plus the fact that it is hand-built anyway. It's just a very, very special car.
And when they say, you know, hand-built and bespoke, they mean it. If you want a yellow Rolls-Royce with a pink leather interior and orange wheels, you can have one.
You may never be able to sell it again, but you can buy one in the first place.
So there are absolutely no restrictions. Some companies, Ferrari springs to mind. You can do a similar thing with your Ferrari, but your colour combinations go to a good taste committee at the factory. Yeah. And if they don't think it's appropriate for their vehicle, they'll say, actually, sir, that's not possible.
None of that at Rolls-Royce, however. You can do what you like.
But, I mean, one of the reasons I think why Rolls-Royce is just up on that pedestal, apart from making some, you know, really impressive cars over the years, is that the whole phrase, best car in the world, was really coined by Rolls-Royce, wasn't it?
Mm.
Back in 1907. But it meant a different thing back then. They did about 20,000 kilometres virtually non-stop in a 1907 Rolls-Royce Silver Ghost. And back at that time, that was quite a feat because it was just so reliable because, you know, the one thing cars weren't back then was completely reliable.
Exactly.
Something we take for granted today, but that's how Rolls-Royce acquired this tag, best car in the world, because it was supremely reliable. So,
because it was nothing to do with luxury at the time.
So by that thinking, a Toyota Corolla is the best car in the world. In the modern sphere?
You'd notice an uncomfortable silence there. I have nothing really to come back at that with.
I mean, it's tempting also to say heritage, I suppose, for a luxury car. But
absolutely.
One of the funny things about Rolls-Royce, this is a Rolls-Royce fact that I'm about to get out, is this car that we're in now has no real direct connection with Rolls-Royce past about 2003. I'm sure most people remember that there was a bit of a spat between BMW and Volkswagen back in 1998 when a company called Vickers owned Rolls-Royce and Bentley, and they decided to split them up and sell them off. And Volkswagen and BMW got into a bit of a bidding war.
Well, BMW largely expected to be the one to buy it because they'd had an involvement with Vickers and Rolls-Royce for some time.
They had.
Supplying them engines for the cars, and they also had an engine building plant in Germany where they manufactured aircraft engines together.
You've got more factoids than me.
I've done my homework. And so they were largely, you know, they kind of expected it was theirs. Bit of backroom dealing, probably.
But it wasn't. Volkswagen badly wanted to get into the luxury car sphere, and they did. They bought what they thought was the company lock, stock and barrel.
For about £100 million more than BMW were offering. So it was not only embarrassing that Volkswagen beat them to the punch, they also spent a hell of a lot more money than BMW were offering, which is, you know, a good way to embarrass a company in the car world.
But and this is the next bit of the story is still incredible to me when you consider how much money is involved and how much due diligence must have been done. What Volkswagen did not realise at the time was that the Rolls-Royce name and logo were both owned by the aero division of Rolls-Royce, not the car company.
So basically all Volkswagen bought was an old factory, some old designs, and the grill and the spirit of ecstasy.
And cars which were at the time powered by BMW.
Powered by BMW engines, yes. Yeah.
So the Rolls-Royce Aero Company, which had this relationship with BMW, promptly turned around and sold the name and the logo to BMW. So there was a bit of a stalemate.
For a little while.
Yeah, and what happened was BMW agreed to let Volkswagen keep on making cars with their engines and with their name and logo. And in return, Volkswagen agreed to sell the rights to make the cars, which included the shape of the grille, to BMW. So what happened in 2003 was everything switched around. They all did musical chairs. BMW ended up with Rolls-Royce and the rights and the ability to make these brand new cars in a brand new factory that they'd spent that 5 years building. And they launched the Phantom in 2003, and that was the first kind of BMW Rolls-Royce, and it's a completely new car from a completely new company. The only thing that was carried over, really, is the name.
Very much. I mean, you'll notice that there was a massive change between basically all the old Rolls built under the Volkswagen ownership were still same old design, the Bentley-shaped, basically, the classic Rolls-Royce that we think of that's been that basic shape since the late 50s, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously modernised and upgraded, but it was still the same basic shape. And then out comes the Phantom, that was just this massive completely different thing.
I always thought it looked like a Thunderbird's car.
It looked absolutely fantastic.
Still does, yeah. Actually.
And then when you see it in the metal, even when you see it in the metal today, you are just staggered by how massive it is.
Yep.
It's just huge.
And so, I mean, Volkswagen kept Bentley, obviously, and they kept all the old Rolls-Royce facilities and offices and things. Obviously been substantially modernised and upgraded since then. So I guess now they're each happy in their own little ways.
Well, I suppose so. They've all both made a success of both of the brands that they've ended up with, but there's still that overriding feeling that no one really came out of that looking terribly smart.
No, I think the consumers have come out.
Absolutely.
Because both brands have really returned to their roots. Yep. Bentley is now a sort of a super luxury sporting brand. I mean, even their big limos like the Flying Spur, they're still very, very sporty cars to drive. Mm. Rolls-Royce has sort of returned to being just super luxury brand. So, you know, it's worked out well for those lucky people who have the money to buy these cars.
Absolutely.
You know, the world carries on. But I guess that name, Rolls-Royce, is the thing that kind of inspired Mercedes to have a crack at this luxury market too. And rumour has it. That's licensed to say anything you like. Rumour has it that at the time of the Volkswagen BMW stoush over Rolls-Royce, Mercedes-Benz were quite keen to get in on that too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what prompted them to create this luxury brand called Maybach. And I say create. They didn't create
resurrect.
The name, did they?
They brought it back to life. Maybach was actually sprang into life in 1909, so roughly the same time as Rolls-Royce, rather, which was 1907. In contrast to Rolls-Royce, however, it was originally established as an aircraft engine manufacturer that eventually would go on to make luxury cars, whereas Rolls-Royce was originally established as a car manufacturer that would go on to make aircraft engines.
How about that?
So the Germans do it the other way around to the British, which is completely as it usually is.
So, I mean, Mercedes-Benz had this name, didn't they? And they basically sat on it until 1997.
It was all part of the Daimler group. Yeah. So they owned it anyway. Basically, Maybach was famous from about 1920 onwards for making super luxury cars, like Rolls-Royces. And very, very sort of scarce, very high quality, very expensive. That all stopped when the war started, and production of Maybach cars actually didn't start again after the war. So, until Mercedes revived the name in 1997, I believe.
Yeah, 1997 they launched it. So, around the same time that all this business with BMW and Volkswagen and Rolls-Royce was happening. And they launched a couple of bespoke cars. So, they weren't just rebadged or reconfigured Mercedes-Benzes. They were actually bespoke cars. The Maybach, and correct me if I'm wrong, Maybach 57 and the 62, referring to the wheelbases. So they
indeed
were huge cars.
And actually, they're actually named in decimetres, just to be difficult, which is a unit of length that is 100 millimetres long.
Oh, okay.
Which I found out.
That's the way I would name a luxury car.
Absolutely. What do you name it? Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, I mean, difficult, but the two Maybach models, they weren't a huge success. They were extremely expensive.
In fact, I have some numbers here.
Oh, you got
numbers. I have numbers. When they went on sale in 2002, they expected to sell 2,000 units a year.
That's ambitious.
It was extraordinarily ambitious. When they pulled the plug in 2013, they'd only sold 3,000.
Yeah.
So they didn't get anywhere near it. In 2010, they sold 157 Maybachs, compared to 2,711 similarly priced Rolls-Royces.
Yeah, so not a goer.
It was never a goer. It just did not work.
People obviously just didn't identify with the brand.
No.
They didn't want to spend the money. And in the wake of the financial crisis and all the rest of it, I think they pulled the pin in 2012, correct?
Yes, was around then.
Yeah, and by that stage, sales had slowed down to, I read somewhere, it was something like 40 cars globally.
It was down into the double figures. Yeah. It was absolutely tiny. No one. I mean, they were magnificent cars. Absolutely incredible cars. But
just like travelling in first-class aircraft cabin, really, wasn't it? Definitely cars to be driven in rather than drive.
Something about, well, the back seats were absolutely just stunning, lazy boy type, as you say, first-class aircraft.
Yeah.
But
so, I mean, that kind of keeled over in 2012, and Mercedes-Benz carried on to make some very, you know, other very successful models, including a new S-Class. And so what do you do with a failed brand like that? Well, you have another crack at it, which they're doing this year. At the Paris Motor Show, they unveiled the first Mercedes-Maybach model. So they've done what they are doing with Mercedes-AMG, which is they've created a new sub-brand. So there's Mercedes-Benz.
For your standard cars.
Yep. There's Mercedes-AMG, which are all the high-performance cars. And now there's a third brand, Mercedes-Maybach. And what they've done is just take one step back, and they've based the new Maybach limousine on the S-Class. Now, it looks slightly different. It's got a different roof line. Yeah. It's got a big C-pillar so that you're sitting behind a C-pillar for privacy. It's obviously loaded with luxury equipment. It's the long wheelbase version. It's got the big V12 engine out of the Mercedes S600. And so they're having a crack at it again. I don't know if this car is considered to be up to the level of a Rolls-Royce Phantom, for example. I think it's going to be pretty expensive.
I think it's going to be fairly pricey, and it's probably, in terms of luxury and technology, will be up.
Yeah.
With this, at least.
Well, they're
possibly
certainly,
even exceed this.
Mercedes-Benz certainly not short of technology.
No, so but it's still, I still don't see it having, I mean, they'll sell better because it's a Mercedes model now, no doubt.
Yes.
I think. But it still won't be have the same appeal.
No. And I don't, to be honest, I don't think it's intended to have the same exclusivity because they are also talking about extending that Mercedes Maybach brand into other models.
To an E-Class model.
Yeah, so you might see an E-Class, you might see an SUV, Mercedes Maybach even. I mean, that would have to be on the car.
Interesting fact, Rolls-Royce fact that I will bring up here about rebadging smaller cars. There was a one-off Rolls-Royce Mini made about...
How fantastic.
I can't remember the exact date now, but it was... it was rumoured to be something they were going to put out on the motor show rounds, but I think they chickened out in the end and kind of just left it as a dealership-level thing. But it was a Mini with a full-on Rolls-Royce interior, and it had carried Rolls-Royce badging.
That would kind of work as a novelty. They're two iconic brands. People love Minis.
Both very British, now owned by Germans, so there you go. I don't see why.
So, I mean, we've talked a bit about sort of this desire to be at the very top of the tree, but the other two brands, like Audi, for example, hasn't really felt the desire to get into this. No. They've already got Bentley, obviously, through the Volkswagen connection.
And even Bentley is, as you said before, it's far more sporty type bent to it than the absolute full-on luxury. I mean, they're very luxurious cars, but they do have a focus on driving that isn't as present in this. I mean, I'm sure this is still capable of being thrown around at quite silly pace.
The Ghost is an extremely fast car. Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
But just sort of a more of overtly sporting streak to the Bentley. But and
Audi is more of a mainstream brand anyway.
Absolutely.
So you know, it's all part of the family, I guess. And the Volkswagen Group family is very, very large. There's a lot of brands there. They've basically got all the bases covered.
Pretty much, more or less. Which actually makes BMW's sneaky behind the move back manoeuvring outdoing them to get Rolls-Royce even more impressive, I suppose.
Do you know what Bentley did around that time, though? And this is, I apologise, I'm digressing, but something's just popped into my brain, which doesn't always file things in the right order. Around that time, Bentley sneaked in and gifted the royal family the official royal car, which is still a Bentley, which is not what you'd expect, because Queen Elizabeth has a long history of driving Rolls-Royces. Mm. She loves Rolls-Royces.
Mm-hmm.
But they sneaked in and made this official gift of the royal car, which is sort of a bespoke Bentley limousine, which you still see. They still use it. I think there might even be two of them. There's an official one and a sort of a backup one.
Yeah.
And, I mean, so that was quite crafty. That was like a two fingers to BMW.
That whole period, they were just all having a go at each other, quite regardless of what it cost how badly it would turn out for them in the end. But
so, I mean, this is all this business has been around sort of those big heritage brands, but other brands have come into the luxury sphere and just started afresh.
Mm.
And the one that would spring to mind is Lexus, I guess. Now, Lexus has never really competed at the very, very top level of, you know, $800,000 cars.
No.
But back in 1989, when Toyota launched this luxury brand called Lexus, they launched it with one model, the LS. And I think at that time, if you'd, you know, asked somebody in the know in the automotive industry what's the best car in the world, a lot of people probably would have said that Lexus LS.
Absolutely.
Because it was at a time when the German cars, the BMWs and Mercedes-Benzes, weren't necessarily sort of on the top of their game.
No.
You know, they'd let quality slip a little bit, and this Japanese brand came along and absolutely blew them out of the water.
Well, interesting. Japanese manufacturer fact that I'll slip in here.
Yes.
89, of course, was the same year that Honda unveiled the NSX.
Yeah, again,
which did the same thing to the supercar market that the LS did to the luxury car market.
Yeah, gave Ferrari a huge kick up the pants,
absolutely,
didn't it?
I mean, the Japanese manufacturers were just at the absolute top of the game there. They were just well beyond anything anyone else was doing.
And I mean, even back in 89, if you'd looked at the Rolls-Royces and Bentleys that were being produced, I mean, they were still quite special cars.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
I don't think they were absolutely top of their game in terms of quality and refinement.
They certainly weren't cutting-edge technology. They were based on very, very old underpinnings and very old engines still, with the old 6.75 V8 that was...
Yeah, absolutely. They're very old school.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that Lexus, they still make an LS, of course, and the top LS, I think, is the hybrid now, isn't it? And
yes,
that's
LS
sort of a $300,000 car.
And it's a magnificent car.
So it's certainly up there in terms of refinement and quality. It's not quite at the level. It's still half the price of a Ghost. And, you know, they are mass-produced cars still.
Yeah.
So Lexus has obviously moved on and sort of become a bit more mainstream. Lexus has got small cars. They've got SUVs. They've got all sorts. But the other... thing that's kind of in the news at the moment is a mainstream brand which is trying to go a bit luxury.
Yes.
Which you've had some experience
with. I went to the launch of the other day is the Hyundai Genesis, which is a $100,000 luxury Korean car.
Yeah, so again, it's not right up at the top
level.
It's
not right up at the point
of
view,
but it is right in the face of the German
manufacturers. Absolutely. Well, particularly Lexus, too.
Yes.
It's right, aimed right at Lexus. But
also BMW 5
also,
Series, Jaguar XF.
I mean, it's got a 232 kilowatt V6. It's hooked up to an 8-speed automatic transmission. It's packed with all the electronic toys and technology you can think of that the Germans all have, and even a lot of stuff that they don't have. I mean, it comes standard in New Zealand. In New Zealand, basically, it just comes standard with everything. There are no options. They're bringing one model in. It costs $100,000. Well, at least it says on paper it costs $100,000. If you go to your Hyundai dealer, I'm sure there's wiggle room there. But
that begs the question, though, doesn't it? Which I guess is the question that we're addressing in this podcast. Has Hyundai made a convincing luxury car, or is it just a really expensive, really good Hyundai?
Well, it has to be said, for the money you pay, disregard all badges and anything like that, for the money you pay, it is definitely worth it, and it's possibly even could be considered a bargain. It's a very, very luxurious, very comfortable, very high-tech, extraordinarily safe car.
Yeah.
It is, in fact, at the moment, the safest car tested by ANCAP in Australia.
It is. It's scored...
36.88 out of a possible 37 points.
So you know what's going to happen next. ANCAP is going to...
Absolutely.
Raise the standards for testing.
Yeah.
They just keep
adding points here and there. And I mean, out of 37, who scores out of 37 points?
You've got to leave yourself somewhere to go.
Ridiculous.
That's impressive.
That is a very impressive number. Apparently, it's got maximum score everywhere in the side impact, the pole test, and it only got 15.88 out of 16 for the front offset impact score.
Yeah.
And Hyundai claim that that's largely because they design it around a different frontal impact test than the ANCAP test, which is I can't remember how they call it, what they describe it as now, but it's... Anyway.
So, I guess you get a sense of occasion in a car like that, in a different way to what you get it in a car like a Rolls.
The downside to the Hyundai, I would say, is the interior is very, very plain and conservative. They've kept it very low key, and they've perhaps gone a bit too conservative.
That's exactly what Lexus did.
Yes,
back in the early days, and they learnt their lesson.
Yes,
I was going to say very quickly, but they weren't.
No, it didn't take them. They've only just learned it now.
20 years,
but the current Lexus are very, very distinctive, and I think they look fantastic, particularly their interiors. But yeah, that's the one thing about the Genesis that I didn't particularly like. I think it does all come down to whether people will accept $100,000 for a Hyundai.
Yeah, I mean, there's a smugness factor there. If you're buying a car like that, you're making what you probably perceive as a very wise choice.
You sound exactly like Andy Sinclair, the head of of Hyundai New Zealand who made that point.
I would just like to point out to all of our listeners that I was not at the
He
launch.
Wasn't. He just happens to be saying the same things as
yeah.
he.
They're so basically, in the wrong line of
business. They're going after the people who will look at the numbers, look at the specs, and decide, that is a good luxury car, I don't care about the badge. Yeah.
So that has the qualities of a luxury car,
Absolutely.
Even if it doesn't have the presence.
Absolutely. They know they're not going to drag people away from their Mercedes or their BMWs anytime soon.
Yeah.
Particularly because, I mean, he didn't say it, but it was strongly hinted that a lot of those people buy them purely for the badge, which may or may not be true.
That's such a predictable thing for someone like that to say, though, isn't it?
Of course it is. Yeah, but I suspect that there will probably be a fairly decent-sized market in the more rural areas.
Yes.
Where
is there a ute version?
No, there isn't, unfortunately. But I'm talking retired farmers.
Right, okay.
People with quite a sum of money, they can afford to drop $100,000 on a luxury car.
Yes.
But if you bought a German brand, they're reluctant to do that because they're seen as sort of...
A bit flashy.
You know?
Yeah.
You think you're a bit good there, do you, mate, buying this car? So I think there'll be appeal. There are people that would buy a Honda Legend maybe back in the day when that was around. That wasn't exactly a roaring success,
no,
so that's probably not a good example to hold up.
From what I've seen of the Genesis, and I've not sat in it or driven it or anything, but from what I've seen of it, it's not particularly strongly branded as a Hyundai.
No,
is Genesis supposed to be a separate brand like Lexus?
Well, they originally, when it was launched overseas, there was talk of that.
Because there was more than one Genesis model when they launched
the coupe.
There was
the coupe came first, didn't it? Then
it
the sedan.
Yeah.
And there was talk of it, but they strongly deny that now. So
they strongly deny that there was talk that's on record.
Well, strongly deny that it was ever intended to be a sub-brand. There is only one Hyundai badge on the car.
Yep.
It's on the back.
Is there an H on the steering wheel?
No.
So you're not looking at an H?
No, you're looking at a Genesis logo.
Well, there you go.
Remarkably like a Chrysler logo, I have to say.
Or an Aston Martin logo.
Or Aston Martin logo, that was mentioned.
Well, that answers the question for me. If you're sitting in the driver's seat and you're looking at a steering wheel that doesn't have a Hyundai badge on it, what car does not have its manufacturer's brand on the steering wheel?
Yeah.
Hardly
fact,
any.
There's nothing to be seen inside the car, I don't believe, that has the Hyundai badge on it.
Stop kidding yourselves, Hyundai. But I'm looking forward to driving the Genesis.
Yeah.
I think it's really
interesting. We spent a couple of days on the launch, and the more I drove it, the more I liked it.
Yeah.
And the more I looked at it, the more I liked it too. It's a remarkably good looking car.
Yeah. Quite angular, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. But time will tell whether it's a success or not. But it took Lexus a very long time to break into that market, and they're still not exactly selling huge numbers. So.
No, well, Hyundai don't have great ambitions of selling a lot of cars, they do.
No, they're
like
sort
a halo model.
Yeah, they're aiming. I mean, they said they'd be thrilled if they sold five a month and eight a month. Eight a month would be enough to put them well up in that segment. It would be enough. I think Jaguar sell about five cars a month and things like that. So, I don't know whether they will sell five a month, but.
Well. Look, I think we've put the world to rights. I'm actually going to stick with the Rolls just for now.
I think so.
I'm pretty happy with it.
Not too far wrong with the Rolls.
Yeah, very nice. Enjoying it. We'll come back down to earth maybe next time with some more mainstream vehicles.
Although I don't know.
You don't want to?
I don't think I will. I'm actually off to America to drive something very interesting shortly, so that'll probably be in our next podcast, and it's certainly nowhere near down to earth.
Oh, all right, I'll look forward to that.
Okay, well, thank you very much for listening again, and that's all we'll put you through today. The first ever podcast, the first ever New Zealand podcast, I think we'd be safe saying that. Maybe done somewhere
it's getting very niche now.
I know,
first
we're
ever New Zealand podcast from a moving
first
Rolls Royce.
First ever New Zealand car-based podcast from a moving Rolls Royce ever.
See you next time.
See you.
The New Zealand Motoring Podcast, brought to you by podcasts.co.nz.